T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Listen for New York Mets baseball this weekend on the Sports Leader. Mets Nationals Saturday at 3 on AM 950 and 95.7 FM. The Sports Leader, ESPN Rochester.
Here in the Sports Bar with Danger Battaglia, we only talk to the best, we only talk to the brightest, including Bills sideline reporter Sal Capaccio from our sister station WGR in Buffalo. And yesterday, like a holiday in Buffalo, Sal, Dingus Day. I mean, you've been in Buffalo a while. You're not Polish, but I think a lot of people in Rochester kind of scratch their heads and look to our neighbors at the West on Dingus Day as to like, what do you got going on over there? Dingus Day? What?
Yeah, I grew up in Buffalo. You know, I mean, and in fact, Cheektowaga is the town I grew up in, and it's a very pretty predominant Polish community over there, not in the part that I grew up in. But look, you're talking to an Italian kid from Buffalo, all right? I'm not into the Dingus Day thing, but you can't grow up here and not knowing about it. It's kind of like growing up here and not eating chicken wings or not visiting Niagara Falls. You have to at least be aware, know about it. And basically, you know, I've never participated, but I do know that the boys and the girls on the, I think it started with on the Monday after Easter, boys would run around and touch girls with pussy willows, and girls would shoot water guns at boys, and then the next day it'd be reversed. But now, like, both do it. Like, it just, whether you're a boy or girl, you squirt water guns at each other and chase each other with pussy willows.
I don't see any problem.
And then you celebrate Polish history, yeah. And you polka dance and eat Polish food.
Normal.
How does this not spread? Because I look at Rochester as a city that likes Buffalo things. We love the Bills. We love the Sabres. We love our AAA baseball. A lot of similarities between the two cities, yet it doesn't translate, but it sounds like a fun day where you can take the day off and drink. Is that essentially what it is, Sal?
I think that's the case. You know, I mean, you have St. Patrick's Day for the Irish, and then you have Dingus Day for the Polish. I guess that would be the way to look at it. It's, you know, once a month, if you're a little bit Irish and a little bit Polish, you pretty much get one day each month, March and April, to take advantage of that. But like I said, not that I know I'm from Buffalo. I know about it. I witness it, observe it, but I'm not a participant with a last name like with a full name like Salvatore Antonino Capaccio. I'm not much into the Polish celebration.
Sal, what are the Bills going to do with Mike Gillisley?
I have an inclination that they're not going to match.
Yeah,
they could very well. They could do it, but that I would think that if they felt that he was worth over $6 million over a two-year period, $4 million up front, that they would have tendered him in a second-round level. They didn't because they figured that they do not have that kind of a value on him, especially when you think about it, guys. You're paying – if you take this contract and he's going to count $4 million against your cap this year, let's say – you know, or a little bit more, boy, then you're talking about $12 million in running backs this year just in your top two, not counting your fullback DeMarco, who you signed, and Mike Tolbert. So I just can't see them doing that, and they'd probably rather, you know, walk away and grab the fifth-round pick.
Well, and if it ends up going that way, tell us a little bit about the next man up here, Jonathan Williams, who the Bills spent a fifth-round pick on, but we didn't see a lot of him last year, Sal.
Didn't, you know, and I don't know what the organization feels about him. I really don't. You know, new coaching staff comes in. He was in preseason, or wasn't the first game. It was the last preseason game, I think, last year. He fumbled the ball and, you know, kind of had a couple fumbles in camp like this, so it kind of cost him a little bit. And then he didn't get on the field a lot. But, you know, like, he was pretty good in college. He played pretty well at Arkansas. Before he came in the league, he had that DUI, and that kind of, you know, had some question marks about him coming in a little bit. But, you know, we haven't seen him a lot, as you said. We don't know. I'll say this, guys. Look, Mike Gillisley had a historic season last year. I don't think people realize he was. I did the math on this. He had the 13th best yards per carry season since the merger. I mean, he with a guy, with anybody with 100 yard carries or more, that's a lot of carries. I mean, that's a guy who's going to carry the ball a lot and have a big and have big numbers. And by the way, he did it 2 years in a row. The year before, he didn't have 100 carries. But for 2 years in a row, he averaged 5.7 yards per carry, found the end zone a ton. That's why he got the nickname Touchdown Mike. Like, he's been very good for the Bills. But let me remind everybody, he was on the street when the Bills picked him up. He was unemployed because they had a guy named Carlos Williams who was doing the same thing, basically. So in this offense, with this type of run-blocking offensive line, and I know it's going to be a different kind of offense, I think that you can get very good production from – I'm not saying you can get that kind of production like Gillislee gave you, exactly. That's going to be tough to do. But I don't know if you're going to have that much of a drop-off for the kind of money that you would command to keep him here.
And you've got a deep class at running back this year in
That's
the draft.
Right.
If you're getting a fifth-round pick in return, I mean, I'm not saying you have to go running back at that fifth-round slot that you would get for Gillislee, but there's certainly some options in this year's draft as well. Sal Capaccio, our guest in the Sports Bar with Danger and Battaglia, and by the way, a great piece that Sal put together at ESPNRochester.com. Who will be available when the Bills draft? The list of just all of the probabilities, Sal, really great deep dive as far as who's going to be available for the Bills and where, and we've been hearing so much about the quarterbacks and the Bills doing their due diligence and talking to everybody. I mean, you know, this has got to be a smokescreen, right? I mean, if the Bills fall in love and move up in the draft, I mean, does that make any sense at all?
Well, I don't think it's got to be. I think it might be. I very well think they could draft a quarterback at 10. Look, but here's the difference, though. You know, 2013, they went into that draft saying, we are taking a quarterback. I think the whole world kind of knew about it. Even if you didn't believe them, they were going to do it. I mean, Buddy Nix came on our radio station 2 months before that, or back in November that year before that draft, and said, before I leave here, I'm going to make sure there's a franchise quarterback in place. So going into that year, they said, we are drafting a quarterback. They instructed Doug Whaley and his staff, find the best quarterback you can, and we're going to draft him. So they identified EJ. We know how that turned out, but that was the plan. No matter, you know, if Whaley and his staff would have said, excuse me, Geno Smith or Mike Glennon was the top quarterback, he would have been the pick. I don't think that's the case this year. What I do think is happening this year, though, is they're saying, look, we are very open to taking a quarterback. As long as it's one of these guys, whoever that may be, Trubisky or Watson, whoever, if that guy's available when we select, we're going to grab him. I don't think they're going to just take a quarterback at all costs like in 2013, but I absolutely believe they're ready to pull the trigger on one, considering the way they handled the Tyrod Taylor situation. Guys, they were ready to walk away from him. If Tyrod didn't restructure, he would not be on this roster. And if that tells you that they're ready to walk away from him, and they also give escape clauses after this year, that tells me they're ready to move on from him.
Wow, that's a good point. Sal Capaccio joining us here in the Sports Bar 95.7 ESPN. Sal, about your piece that Danger referenced there, as far as who will be there at number 10, the Bills fans. Let's just say, for the sake of this argument, they won't move down, they don't move up. Who would be your optimal guy there, sitting there at number 10, where Bills fans could say, wow, I can't believe he was sitting there at number 10?
I think it would be Marshawn Lattimore. I mean, look, they have a clear need at cornerback. I think it's the biggest need on the team, and he's the number one corner in the draft. And I'd be surprised if he is there. I think he is one of the five best players in this draft. So he's probably going to go within the top five, but certainly I would say within the top nine. If Marshawn Lattimore was there at number 10, I don't think the Bills could go wrong selecting a guy that could come in and really might start day one opposite Ron Darby. He would compete with Kevon Seymour for the starting job, and he could very well win that. Kevon's a sixth-round pick from 1 year ago, and this is a guy that you could use to essentially replace, you know, Stephon Gilmore. I think the other guy would be his teammate, Malik Hooker. If Malik Hooker, or even Jamal Adams, I'll say one of those safeties, if one of those safeties is available at 10, I think that's the guy that I would say, boom, pull that trigger, go right ahead. I think a lot of people like Reuben Foster. I do too, as a pure football player, as a linebacker, what he could do in McDermott's scheme. Probably a very, very good player that could play in Buffalo. I just don't know about how those numbers now start fitting with him and Preston Brown and Reggie Ragland all playing there. And, you know, I know they have plans for Ramon Humber, but I think those would be the four guys. But I think Lattimore is a very easy choice at number 10 if they're sitting there and he's available.
Sal, it's almost a certainty that a quarterback will go in the top 10, and the Bills sitting at 10. I mean, they kind of have the best of both worlds, don't they? I mean, if there's a run on quarterbacks early in this draft and some of these elite skill position players fall to them at 10, and if they don't, then you've got people behind the Bills that could go quarterback and want to, you know, move up in the draft to take that quarterback, whether you're talking about, you know, a Cleveland or a Houston. I mean, you know, is it best for Buffalo to just let the draft come to them, sit patiently at 10 rather than try to move up inside the top 10?
Well, they shouldn't move up. I don't think they should. I think this is, you know, that generally never works out, right? It seems like, I mean, I think of all the times teams move up, and you almost rather be on the other end, especially in this draft. You know, this is a good draft. This is a deep draft, especially at places the Bills need players, like DB, corner and safety. Good drafts there. It's one of the best, it may be the best draft ever for tight ends. That's how good this draft is for tight ends. You referenced the running back draft, running backs earlier, if they lose Gillislee. So, yeah, I think getting more picks. Plus, on top of that, the Bills have 6 picks. I mean, they need to come out of this draft with 7 or 8 picks, I think, not 6 if they can maneuver themselves. So I think moving down is more of the play than moving up. But let's remember, if they want a quarterback, you say go top 10. I'll go a step further. I don't see a quarterback going off the board any later than 6. I think that Jets spot there, whether the Jets keep it or someone trades into it, I'd be surprised if a quarterback was not selected in the top 6 picks. I did the research on the first quarterback taken in every draft in this millennium. By the way, the millennium starts, what, 2001? So mm-hmm. I didn't count 2000. 2001 through now, only one time in the entire millennium has their quarterback, the first one off the board, been not taken within the first 3 picks. And that was the Bills taking E.J. Manuel in 2013.
Yeah, I mean, I look at these teams in the top 10, Sal, and you know, it's nice that they've made these offseason signings, whether you're in San Francisco or Chicago, but you have needs at quarterback. I mean, you know, Chicago could take a Trubisky at 3, certainly the Jets at 6. I mean, you know, to not think that a quarterback is going to fall out of the top 10 to me is kind of crazy.
Yeah, not only that, but think about a team like New Orleans, who they need to move on from Drew Brees at some point. Could they trade up to try and grab one of these guys to start that process? Could the San Diego Chargers do it at 7, right? I mean, you're Philip Rivers, how much longer does he have? I mean, there were talk that was even coming back this year to play. How about the Arizona Cardinals? I think it's pretty much a foregone conclusion that Carson Palmer's going to be done after this year. They need to find somebody. You're not going to get Trubisky at 13 if you like him. You're going to have to move up. So I just think that there's going to be a quarterback that goes in the top 6. That's what always happens in the draft. Quarterbacks go early because, you know, it's the most important position in sports, and if you want to get your guy, you got to make a bold move to get him. And look, all the talking heads, including myself, have said for months, this is not a very good quarterback class. But the more I talk to people in the NFL, the more I read things, I will tell you guys, the NFL feels a lot better about this class than we do. Personnel people feel a lot better about this class than we do. And I'm going to go on record and say, I think 6 or even 7 quarterbacks go in the first 60 picks.
Wow. Sal Capaccio joining us here in the Sports Bar, 95.7 ESPN. Where I come down on the draft, Sal, in a perfect world, on a team with only 6 picks, I would love the Bills to trade down. I understand that's always kind of a challenge because you don't want to make sure you get good value when you trade down. Could the best scenario then be, like Danger said, maybe a Chicago takes one, maybe the Jets at number 6. If quarterbacks start flying off the board there, somebody like an Arizona or a Cleveland, maybe you get a team like Houston going all the way up, that there could be opportunity there for the Buffalo Bills if that run of a quarterback starts to happen.
Yeah, I mean, unless they're one of the teams that wants the quarterback, that's what it comes down to, right? But absolutely, if they don't really want a quarterback, if they aren't so in love with one that they want to grab one at 10 or whatever, then you want to root for as many quarterbacks as possible to go. I think you also want to root for as many running backs as possible. You want Fournette to go early. You want McCaffrey to go early. You want Dalvin Cook to go early. The more you get quarterbacks and running backs, those other guys start falling down. Now suddenly O.J. Howard starts falling, and Malik Hooker starts falling, and Jamal Adams starts falling. And now you're like, wait a minute, I'm sitting at 10. You know, you look at that article I wrote, I said, there's pretty much 14 guys here. Out of those 14, the Bills select 10. So even if all 10 of those picks, 9 of those picks were guys on those lists I made, you're still dealing with 5 guys still remaining that you could take. So now what if there's 10 guys still remaining on those lists? Now you can move back. Here's what they do, though. So NFL teams, this is how they do their board. They say, all right, they grade every guy, obviously. They put a round grade on each guy. And I will tell you guys, no NFL team pretty much ever has 32 first-round grades. It just doesn't happen. There are not 32 players in the draft in any year that NFL teams grade as first-round talent. They usually grade about 20 to maybe 25 at the most first-round talent. So let's just say the Bills have 20 guys graded in the first round. That's the line they would trade to. They would say, we're only willing to go to that because if you're going to trade down, you still want to get a first-round talent. And in order to do that, you're only going to trade pretty much to the spot where you think the first-rounders stop.
Sal, do you think the Bills look at linebacker prospect out of Temple, Hassan Reddick, as a first-round talent?
Yes, I think they do. I think the league should. He's really good. He's versatile. He can do a lot. I think he's an under-the-radar type of selection at 10, which is probably why you're bringing him up. Maybe he's a guy you take. But I don't know. Again, I think linebacker's tough because even though Sean McDermott, you know, could use him and he's a defensive guy, you know, the numbers at linebacker right now, if you put him in there, you know, you got some moving parts you got to deal with. But I can see it. I could see it. I think that's a surprise and under the radar type of way to go. Linebacker, I think the other one is offensive tackle. This is a very bad offensive line draft, by the way. Mm-hmm. But out of the top guys, you still have a Cam Robinson and a Garrett Bowles, Ryan Ramczyk. You know, I'm not saying those guys would go at 10, but you know, if you really like one of them enough, maybe you take a Robinson at 10. The Bills have a need at right tackle, guys, and you know, maybe that's a spot we're not talking about enough.
How do you come down on Joe Mixon here? Joe Mixon, obviously a player that has some serious baggage, has some on-field talent for sure, and Sean McDermott, I would imagine, will be asked this question when he speaks to the media on Thursday. Sal, are you hearing anything character-wise here? Would the Buffalo Bills avoid that pick altogether?
I haven't heard, but my sense is he would be off their board. I can't imagine that they would select him. Look, the Bills right now are in this phase where they're trying to be as boring as possible. After everything that happened last year, after having a head coach that was a carnival barker, after having press conferences that were panned nationally all over the internet and all over, you know, 24/7 sports channels and things like that because of what happened with Anthony Lynn and Doug Whaley at the end of the year and that stupid media policy that had all those things that happened. The Bills have basically, I mean, look, they fired their PR director, guys. I mean, they, you know, whether you want to call it that they just gave him a different role or whatever, let's be honest, you know. Guy was there for 30 years, and they moved him out, and they brought someone else in, and they have, and I know this for sure, they are trying whatever they can to be as boring as possible. Well, you know one of the ways you're not boring? You draft Joe Mixon. That's not boring, because now suddenly there's cameras, there's people talking, there's what are you doing, there's a lot of questions to be answered. I don't think they want that. And then, let's remember, they have a female owner. I mean, are they going to draft Joe Mixon when they have a female owner? I guess one could make the case, well, maybe that's the best spot to do it because that's someone who could really stand up there and say, look, I mean, I've talked with the man. I think that, you know, he's got this issue we can work through and whatever. Maybe Kim can do that. I just don't know if the Bills want to have that look on them with a female owner drafting a player with that on his resume.
Sal, you're so close to the Buffalo Bills. You spend a lot of time around the team and around the guys. I mean, it's hard not to be impressed by what we've seen out of Coach McDermott so far. Do you think the fans are going to be in this honeymoon period through the entire season? If it doesn't go well, do you think we're going to feel about Coach McDermott in December, how we feel about him right now? I mean, I have a hard time hearing anybody right now saying that they're not buying what Coach McDermott is selling.
No, I mean, look, he says all the right things, as you guys know. He's very cliche, but I'll say, you know, if you get to know him, if you get to meet him like I have, and you've sat in a room with him, you've talked one-on-one with him, you've looked him in the eye, he's a really down-to-earth guy. He really is.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's he's just about my age. He's very in tune to how the league works and what his role is in the league and things like that. But, look, if he goes 2-5 in the first 7 games, no one's going to care about that. If he doesn't know how to throw a challenge flag when he's supposed to, no one's going to care about that. That's just what it doesn't matter whoever you are as a coach. He doesn't have the credit or the cachet yet to go out there and lose, you know, 4 of his first 6 games and have people think that it's going to be just fine.
Sal, before we let you go, and I knew you were doing the long show on your station yesterday, and I would imagine the topic, since we carry the Sabres here and we're trying to figure out what the heck is going on there between the GM and the head coach, what's your read on the situation when it comes to Dan Bylsma's job security?
Boy, it's a great question. I have a feeling that they'll keep him on, but I think anything goes once Tim Murray comes back from Florida. I think he's going to have those conversations with Terry Pegula. Look, there's Terry Pegula who basically said, I mean, and he is, and it's true. And he's not the kind of guy that just fires people. Like he came to Buffalo and he said, Darcy's not going anywhere and Lindy's not going anywhere. Now we know that changed eventually, right? But the way that him and his family ran their business for many, many years is they're very loyal. They don't fire people. They don't believe in that. They believe in letting people work through issues and giving them chances, and they see the good in people because those are the kind of people they are. I don't think he wants to be known as a guy who continues to turn over coaches. And this would be, think about it. Doug Marrone left. It wasn't on them. I get it. But you now would have Doug Marrone, Rex Ryan. You'd have three different coaches football-wise and three different coaches hockey-wise in the, what, 5 years he's owned the two teams and 3 years he's owned one and five the other. I mean, boy, that's a lot of turnover. Do you really want to do that? I don't know if Terry Pegula wants to put himself in that position. But I'll say this. I think Tim Murray knows he has a problem on his hands because – his young stars do not get along with the coach. And generally when that happens, we all know who wins that. Yeah. The young stars win.
Yeah. Sal, we appreciate your time as always. Know extremely busy you are, and for you to take some time out of your afternoon to join us here in the sports bar is very, very much appreciated. Let's look forward to talking to you again, hopefully sometime here after the draft. Cool?
Absolutely, guys. We'll hear from Coach McDermott on Thursday about the draft, by the way. So, you know, you'll get a little more intel and info. I don't know how much he'll say, but at least a little something to chew on for everybody.
Yeah, he ain't going to say anything. We'll get the schedule on Thursday, though, too. That'll be good.
That'll be more interesting to talk about, probably. You're
absolutely
right.
All right, Sal Capaccio joining us. Thanks, Sal.
You're welcome, guys.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.